morning. This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And it's also the perfect place to enjoy the book of this author that I have on today. I think he has to be the most outrageous the wildest author that I have ever had on the program. And it is so exciting to welcome Andrew Main to Joy on Paper. We're going to be talking about his newest book, Black Coral, but I have other things to ask him about too. Hi, Andrew.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Oh, great. Oh, my goodness. It is amazing. You know, it's so funny. During this pandemic-y time, I've been trying to think of things to do just to sort of keep myself busy and not going crazy. And one of those is I've been trying to do that trick, you know, where you take a coin out of somebody's ear. I thought, you know, a little magic. And when I heard that you had this new book coming out and then I have you on the program, it was so sad. I thought, oh, it's a Florida book. I wish he would come here to the studio. You're incredible, really. What an overachiever, I guess you would be called.
Wow, what a buildup. I'm sorry that I'm going to be disappointing from here on out, but well, it started off great.
Well, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if you spoke Finnish and I mean, you're so multi-talented. You write books like crazy, and then you are a magician of such renown. It's amazing what the kind of things that you do. I've been watching this week. I've been watching some of your videos, and you're crazy. I don't know if I can. I don't think it's politically correct to call anyone crazy anymore, but you are absolutely wild.
Well, that may be true, but yeah, you know, you'll notice the pattern is that I only have like the fake kind of talent where you can pretend. You know, as writers, we get to make stuff up, and magic, we pretend. So, you know, I don't have, like, real skills, so I had to invent them.
Well, yeah, I think you have real skills. And it shows in this book called Black Coral. As a matter of fact, you are the only author who has ever made me want a glass of red wine at 5 o'clock in the morning. I mean, I don't know why I got that idea. You know, I get up early. I start usually at 4:30. I have my coffee at 5. I'm sitting there reading my books. And I get to the... I'm not going to tell... I hate to tell people about this. I'm going to just say there is a scene. I will call it the ledge scene. And I'm reading this scene, and it is so good. It was so... You wrote it so beautifully. So it's fast. It's so exciting that suddenly I got this idea. I need a glass of red wine. And I don't know why. Perhaps a blood... having something to do with blood. But I, at 5 o'clock in the morning, I wanted red wine.
That's I think Sloane could have used my character in the book. She probably could have used a glass of wine or two at that point in the book as well.
Well, yes, she could. Good. Sloane McPherson is a great character that you've developed, and this entire thing, the underwater investigation unit set here in glorious Florida, is really it's new. It's something unusual, different from, you know, everybody else. I don't think anybody else is doing an underwater cop thing. Laura, we used to call them in England frogmen when I lived in England. So it's really, I think it's a fun series.
Thank you. It's a lot of fun to write. And I did a couple other series, and then it kind of struck me. You know, I grew up in Florida, and Florida, you know, there's a reason why there's so much Florida fiction because it's such an interesting place. And I thought it'd be fun to write stories sort of from kind of the point of view and a bit what have I understood. Because he was like, growing up there, my father was in law enforcement. So dinner time conversation was always filled with, you know, stories about drug dealers and gun runners, which I thought was normal as a kid. And then, you know, being a scuba diver and talking to friends who were involved in the evidence recovery and the solar side of it, I thought it'd be fun to write a story about that. And I know a number of women from Florida, and it is like there is this kind of humor and toughness that I wanted to capture in Sloan, and that's what I tried to do. I just sort of based her on real people I knew, which was just, it's always the easiest way to write is just take somebody you already know and just base it around them, and then don't tell them.
And then you just let her run with it, and she runs wild. Let's just put it that way. She's a little bit, yeah, has a touch of wildness like you. And, you know, every once in a while you get a character that you're going to remember. And, you know, I read a lot of books, and so I know that Sloan is one character who, you know, When I hear that name Sloan, if I hear anybody call Sloan, I'm going to right away think of you, which is a great accomplishment.
Cool. Yeah, thank you. I mean, it's when you find somebody that's so much fun to write, it just sort of happens in front of you.
And I do like the humor in it because there's wisecracking. She's got a boss who, you know, you can talk about, and her new partner in this book. And the nice thing is that there is that sort of banter just the key, you know. It's sometimes some of these books get, police procedural books can get really, really gross and depressing. And you need, and although there are, you know, there's murders and there's all sorts of things going on in this, but still we have a break. We need that break, I think.
You know, that kind of came natural because both my dad and my brother, who are in law enforcement, were practical jokers. And, you know, humor was always a part of things, and, you know, jokes they'd play on each other and the people around them. And my brother is every bit as sarcastic as I am. And so when I wanted to write, you know, a police procedural, it just seemed natural that, of course there's humor. That's every police officer, every law enforcement person I've been around, humor has always been a part of it. And sometimes it just doesn't seem like it's in books. Some books do that. Some books don't. And I just wanted to make sure that was part of mine.
Well, it is part of yours. And I love this underwater investigation unit. Now, of course, I'm broadcasting out of Clearwater, Florida. So, you know, here I live in Florida, and it was so nice. I always like also when a book gives me information that I can use and that I think about, and, you know, I get a little bit educated along the way. And some of the things you write about, alligators and crocodiles, and just other things about Florida nature that you really write so well about, and it's lots of fun to learn these things.
Yeah, I think that I took for granted, like, I live in LA now, and I think I took a lot of things for granted going up in Florida. You know, the fact that, you know, just being a few miles away from the Everglades and a couple times a week going out there and walking on, you know, the levee that, you know, separated that from the canals, and being out there and around there and sort of observing it, you just sort of say, oh, this is kind of normal. And you're like, no, there's no place else like it on Earth. And there's so many things you can say that about Florida. And that's what's wonderful, is to be able to put those into books now, is to talk about these things and things that, you know, we'd be on I-95 and drive by every day and not even think about. And now I get to put it in there.
Oh, yeah, and you put in a lot of things that I didn't know the population of alligators. They sort of, you sort of don't think about it until you read your book. And I was like, yeah, that's why I don't go near any inland lakes, I can tell you, or right near the waterways. I live, you know, on a cliff overlooking the Gulf, so I can see the water and I can see the intercoastal, but I don't go walking down there.
Well, that's one of the things that sort of touched upon is that, you know, alligators have been here a long time before us, and there are, for a good part of Florida history, even recent history, there are more alligators than people, yet they just sort of kind of mind their own business. They just don't, you know, want to get in, don't want to be around us if they can avoid it. And, you know, a lot of the problems we have, which are exceedingly rare for something so large and so ferocious, is, you know, generally deals with kind of encroachment, accidental encounters. And they're amazing. And, you know, I think that, you know, obviously it's something that is around us. We think about it and then we kind of forget about it, which is sort of the amusing part to me, is that, you know, every now and then you'll see a photo of some giant behemoth walking across a golf course and you're like, oh yeah, we live near dinosaurs.
Well, you know, the story, Black Coral, it's... I always hate to tell people too much about it because it starts off, you know, there's an accident, and of course, right away, Sloan McPherson and the team are called in to do a dive. And in a way, I don't want to tell anything more about it because you built it up so nicely. You built a suspense. You built the excitement. And that's part, I think, of the joy of reading this book is that, you know, you uncover sort of there are layers to it, and you uncover things as you go along. And I thought that was part of the fun of it.
Thank you. Every book, every series, I have characters that go on journeys, and every book is about their journey. And so Sloan, when we meet her in the first book before this, and these are standalone books. So if anybody's interested in this, you don't have to. Don't worry. You can start wherever you want. We meet her when she's first a police recovery diver, who's also, she's studying because she's very interested in archaeology and particularly underwater archaeology. And the police aspect is part of her life, but isn't her main pursuit. In the first book, she realizes really that may be her calling, and she becomes serious about this. And this is the book where we see her trying to learn the ropes of being a detective. And she's a very energetic, smart, but impulsive person. And how do you balance that? And she's presented with a case that I loosely based on something that actually happened in Florida, an actual Florida cold case, and then kind of, you know, went in a different direction with it. And, you know, being that her expertise, and she investigates things dealing generally around water, cases that involve with bodies found in water, crimes that happen around water. And so a lot of the book takes place on land, and a lot of it takes place underwater, where, you know, she has to sort of look for clues and find out what's going on.
Well, Boy, when she's underwater, you give us some terrifying moments that are... now, my husband was a big scuba diver. I never was because, to tell you the truth, I was afraid. I tried snorkeling, but that's about as close as I wanted to get to the dangerous things down there. But, of course, you've been doing that. You were doing that all your life, being a Florida boy.
Yeah, it was a hobby when I was younger and did a little bit more, and I'd pick it up and put it down for a while. And then the funny thing happened is my life has a habit of sometimes following things that happen in my books. And so between writing Girl Beneath the Sea, the first book, and then this book, Black Coral, I actually went off and shot my own Discovery. I did a special for Discovery Channel where I went and swam with great white sharks during Shark Week and built a suit to make myself invisible. So, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm going to write a do some book about underwater stuff, and maybe she'll encounter a couple sharks in the first book. And then fast forward a year later, I'm in the ocean, South Australia, surrounded by 16 great white sharks. Like, why couldn't I write about something, you know, somebody who runs, like, you know, a poodle farm or something?
Yeah, that Discovery Channel Shark Week episode was I don't know. I couldn't do it. But, you know, in your case, of course, you are, you know, you can make yourself invisible because you are a magician. Incredible. You've been an illusionist since a young age. And I hope that if you ever, you know, you come over here to Florida to visit family and friends, that you'll come to the studio here. And I'll give you a whole hour. You can talk about your books and do some of your magic, because your magic is really quite incredible.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to let you have my purse because you'll make everything disappear. I might lend you Big Ed. Big Ed's in the control room, and I love that one where you stick umbrellas in people's heads. I don't know if Big Ed might not appreciate it, but it would be very funny, and we could take a photo of that. You do some incredible magic.
Yeah, I got into magic early on when I was a kid, and then after high school, I was like, I either wanted to be a scientist or a magician, and then I lived in Fort Lauderdale, which was the cruise ship capital of the world. And having friends that were professional illusionists and magicians working on ships, I'm like, well, that seems like a better plan for me. So I was, you know, headlined my own show when I was 18 years old, worked for the different cruise lines, and then started working in resorts overseas. And I also got into creating magic. And then I would later on go work for like Penn and Teller and other magicians, you know, David Blaine, David Copperfield, and, you know, work behind the scenes and then sort of develop a reputation as not just a magician, but an adventurer of magic, because that was fun to kind of come up with stuff like, oh, what can I do with my head and with a, you know, paper bag and a bunch of umbrellas? You know, like, ah, oh, stab it, of course.
And then at some point you started writing, and you were nominated by Edgar Award, a nominee for one of your books. Which one? The Jessica Blackwood ones.
Yeah, I believe that was Blackfall.
Yeah, Blackfall. So you were nominated. Yeah. So along the way, doing some magic, you became a really talented author. Did you study writing in school, or did you teach yourself, or what? How'd that happen?
I mean, I took a couple night classes, like, you know, over, you know, sophomore, like I would go to Broward Community College. I think I took a couple like night classes just on creative writing, because I wanted to have a teacher tell me what my weaknesses were, because that was important to me. Because when you write in a vacuum, you know, and you want to get better, you need to find a way to improve. And so the first thing I did is I took two classes, and that was helpful, because very early on, a teacher that pointed out what some of my weaknesses were. And then I didn't write for another 10 years. But then I sat down and decided one day that I wanted to be a novelist. And then I grabbed a bunch of my favorite books and some post-it notes and a pen, and I just made notes. And I just went through and tried to figure out what wasn't in the books on writing, wasn't out there, or what was but was more important, and started to understand, like, why do I like these things? You know, and the number one thing was characters. And that's an obvious thing many writers would tell you, but I kind of had to find that out on my own. And realize, like, if you have a great character and you have a believable plot, you'll have a good book.
Well, you know, it's like in this book, we appreciate Sloane, but you introduce here a new partner for her. And I was looking at, how did you do it? How did you bring this new partner in so nicely, sort of seamlessly, so we right away get a feel for this guy and want to know more about him? And that's an important thing for an author to be able to do.
Well, I think that when you understand your character, you have to figure out the people around them, they're going to either make them, you know, enhance them or distract, or sometimes both. And then also with my character, Sloane is a person that needs to sort of learn from other people, and other people can learn from her. And so that was like adding a new partner, adding somebody in there, that there was going to be this two-way sort of thing. And, you know, she brings somebody in who's an admiration of Sloane, but it was kind of a more, you know, part of the thing. If you're a diver and you read this, like, Sloane comes to this family of, you know, treasure hunters. And she is an expert diver, but she has a lot of bad habits. And I know this firsthand, because I work with people who, you know, been around the water a lot, who would make PADI instructors, you know, lose their minds to see what they do. And I wanted to kind of have this sort of like balance of like, yeah, you can do that. And then you get into problems. And I wanted to sort of show kind of just partner up with somebody that was going to be kind of a balance to things.
Well, I like Hughes very much. And, you know, I, as I said, I hate when people go like to the blurbs on, you know, Amazon and Barnes and Noble, and they read it. So they lose some of the excitement that starts really with you, you know, within a page or two, you're hooked on the story, and then it builds, and you build to the next level, which is, you know, where we're eventually going to get to that ledge that I'm talking about, and everybody's going to want to start drinking red wine. But that's the excitement of it. That's really what I want people to find, that just fun and joy in reading a book that just carries them away, and then look back and say, you know, how did he do it? And then they appreciate you. They say, my goodness, Andrew Main is a genius. I mean, like, really?
Well, I think a book should be kind of like a roller coaster. You could stand outside an amusement park and look at the roller coaster, and if you know all the dips, every place it goes up and it spirals and it spins, and a really good book, like a really good roller coaster, it doesn't matter. You're still going to scream and have fun. And
Exactly.
I like to think that my books, you know, the same way. Like, I can tell you the plot, but I hope that no matter what, people just would love reading it. Because that's the goal.
Yeah, you know, I think what people, all of you people out there, Black Coral is a great read. And you will be taken on this roller coaster by Andrew Main. And you sometimes you'll wish that you were invisible because you get so scared. I love it. I love when you manage to scare me. And Black Coral is really great. And you have a web page that you want people to go to? If you know,
yes, andrewmaine.com.
Yeah.
M-A-Y-N-E.
Yeah, but people don't go there. Just go straight to your bookstore if there's anything open. I don't know if there is. Or go, you know, to online and order this book and just open it up. Sit yourself down and start reading and go on this roller coaster ride with Andrew because he is going to take you on quite a trip underwater. And I think this is going to be turn out to be a really great series for you.
Thank you so much.
Well, you know, I know that if you were, if it wasn't for these times, you'd be on book tours and having fun. And I would, everybody, I'm sure when they come to one of your events at a book tour, really have fun because you probably pull a few magical tricks out on them. And that's what I wanted to do. You know, I, before this pandemic, I used to go to writers' events and I wanted to learn how to do that trick of, you know, taking a quarter or maybe a penny. Because I'm cheap, a penny out of somebody's ear. And I've been working on it, but I'm not doing so well. I don't know about that.
Well, if I'm in Clearwater and we're able to talk, I'll give you my insight into that one.
Okay, well, I hope. Do you come to Florida once in a while?
Well, my parents still live there, so
well,
of course.
Well, you better.
Every year.
Once we can start traveling again, I hope that you come here and pop on down here to Clearwater. We'd love to see you here in the studio. I think you're fantastic. I'm so impressed with you. And everybody, you can see also, you can just go on to YouTube and you can, you sell magical things. What's that about? You sell some of your magic.
Well, I mean, yeah, I did that for a number of years. I had a publishing company where we produced magic videos and books on illusion and the art of magic. And so.
Can they still buy them?
That was the first time. Yeah, they're still out there. They're still everywhere. You know, you'd go to a magic shop or whatever, you'd see that. And I think a lot of that stuff's still available online.
And they're just so much fun. I've been watching, as I said, I've been watching some of them. And they're just so much fun. And do you have a television show right now? No, you're not.
I hard to top Great White Sharks.
Yeah, well, that's true. Anyway, Andrew Main, I think this is a wonderful book, Black Coral. It's a fun read, and people, just believe me and believe Andrew can do this because he is magical. And I really appreciate having you on Joy on Paper today, Andrew.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye now. Bye. Wow, isn't that he's fantastic. Oh, you have to watch some of those videos on YouTube. I like his magic actually better than some of the David Blaine and David Copperfield stuff. I just love the tricks that he does. Anyway, let's have a book buzz, and then we'll be coming back in a few minutes with another author, a really great one, John Hart.
Hey everyone, this is Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Talk Club children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. It's that time of year, it's February, and that means love is in the air, and something that I myself love to do is draw. And that's what some of you guys are going to find yourself doing after reading this new book, Borders, written by children's literature enthusiast Chris Tomasi. In Chris's first published book, it's a book that asks the question, if kids were in charge of making the map of their country and or world, what would it look like? How would our world be redesigned? In an effort of attempting to understand the world we live in, Chris aims to inspire kids to reimagine our world for the better. Illustrated by Mark Breyer, the book encourages kids to go ahead, pick up some paper and pen, and draw the world as they imagine it. As a kid at heart who loves to draw, I think you'll find me drawing the world the way I imagine it too. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back. And I don't know, is he on yet? No, okay. I'm just waiting for John Hart to call. John Hart is the author of a new book called The Unwilling, and of course he has been on the program before. And so I'm looking forward to talking to him about this new book. Meanwhile, I want to thank you for your emails. Please send me any email you have, any questions you have for intellectual property. Next week, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson will be here to answer your intellectual property questions, and I will pass them on to him, and he will then tell you how to protect your intellectual property rights and also how to protect yourself so that you don't do anything foolish like write things on the internet that you shouldn't be writing. You have to be careful with Facebook. There are many authors now. I've run into quite a few authors who have run into problems with postings on Facebook, either people writing things to them or they write things about other authors and then they get themselves in trouble. And recently a local author told me that somebody really was actually harassing her about a character in her books. And she's like, it's a character. I mean, I'm sorry. You know, I write different characters. Not everybody can be the exact same. And so she sort of got flustered and worried and doesn't know what to do. And you don't want to be in a position where you respond sometimes to criticism from a particular person on, you know, sometimes you can just escalate things. So if you're an author and you have a character in your book that somebody disagrees with or somebody doesn't like, I know that it can be very upsetting when you get criticized. And it's one thing, you know, when people post things on Amazon, you can almost never get rid of it. But when it's on Facebook and you think that you can try to, you know, make things better, try to talk to them, try to reason with them, it doesn't always work. It can backfire on you and you have to be just careful about it. So I just want to warn you about that. And Bill Larson will talk about that a little bit more next week because we don't want people to get in trouble. Also, if you're working with somebody else, either co-writing or you have an illustrator, there are also things that you have to do. Because, again, It is very difficult. I know that, you know, I'm not up to that anymore. You know, I'm just not up to any kind of problems. And so I'm very careful what I say on Facebook, too. So please think about what you're doing. And remember, whatever you put on Facebook, it's gone. And it's there. And it's also something you can't get rid of. So it's something to think about. Now, what else? Oh, I have quite a few things coming up. You know, it's so wonderful. I've been getting, as I mentioned, I've been getting quite a few emails from those of you who have started writing after, you know, sort of this pandemic-y period. You started writing. You said, okay, I'm going to write and I'm going to put this book together. And it's really exciting. I love to hear from you. It's difficult. You know, I know that it's difficult sometimes. Sometimes it's not the part of writing is not difficult. You don't sit, you sit down and you start writing. But sometimes, you know, once you get to the point where you've written the book and or you have your first draft, you then have to decide, you know, go back and fix it. And it, you go over it many times. And, you know, just last week, Kristen Hanna was on the program, and she talked about how many times she has to go over one passage, one sentence. It's just part of the process of learning to write. It rarely comes out just perfectly the first time. Now, some authors do, you know, after years of working and learning, sometimes they, you know, you just get to that point where you write something that's just so good. Lee Child told me that when he wrote his first book, The Killing Floor, he wrote the first page, and he just looked at it one time. He saw one sentence in the beginning that he didn't need. But that's that first page, the first time he wrote it, was exactly what appeared, you know, in the book when it was published. Now, that doesn't always happen. You know, sometimes you're just inspired. And that's true. You know, writers get inspired. You get carried away with a character that sometimes takes over for you too, in a way. You're not almost, you know, talking to Andrew Main about magic. I've been looking at his different magical tricks, and I think, well, you know, writing in a way is magical, because here you are writing, you're sitting at your desk or you're sitting somewhere. You know, people used to sit in coffee shops and write. I don't know. People don't do that too much. I noticed in Panera's, we don't have very many people sitting. I was in there the other day, and like three tables were in use, which used to be so crowded at lunchtime, you'd have to, you know, wait. But wherever you are sitting, sometimes these characters just come to you almost full blown, and you start writing. And when Jerome Preisler was on the program a few weeks ago, and we talked about his wonderful Civil War commando book that he wrote, and it is a story about Will Cushing. Now, Will Cushing is an American hero that was really forgotten. People completely forgot about him. And so here is Jerome. He comes across this name. He says, well, this character, you know, who's this guy? You know, he knew quite a bit about the Civil War, and the fact is I know a lot about the Civil War because I read a lot about, particularly about Lincoln, Ulysses S. Grant. Those two characters from the Civil War are some people that I've always been interested in, but I didn't know anything about Will Cushing. And then Jerome Preisler, here's an author, you know, he writes the Tom Clancy books. He writes thrillers, modern-day thrillers, techno thrillers, actually. But he just happened to come across this passage about a young man. He was 19 at the time. Will Cushing was 19 years old when he got involved in the Civil War and became one of, really, in many ways, Admiral Farragut said he was the greatest hero during the Civil War. And so there we have an author who starts, you know, this happens to me too. This happened to me when I found a character I fell in love with. And as Jerome was writing, he realized that this was just so exciting. This story was so exciting. And it became all-consuming with him. And he just started writing it. And Will, in many ways, took over the story. Before he knew what was happening, he could almost hear Will talking to him. And that comes across in the book. That's why of all the books I read in 2020, you know, there are... I'm going to talk when the anniversary of Joy on Paper comes up in March. I'm going to be talking about sort of my top choices for 2020, books that I want you to remember, books that I want you to go back and look at. But you know, so definitely Jerome Preisler's Civil War Commando will be at the top of the list, because once you start reading it and you realize that there was this young man who became a hero simply because he didn't want to give up. He went out there and he was quite amazing, and his accomplishments, you could call him the first Navy SEAL, because he was commanded a boat that went after you know, the biggest enemy of the during the Civil War for our navy. And when I read something like that, when I get excited about a book like that, and that's what I want, that, you know, you get this kind of excitement. So I'm going to select for the sixth anniversary of Joy on Paper, I'm going to select those books that I think you should go back if you've missed them. And this is the problem for writers. You know, they write a book, they have this window of opportunity. They have a release date, and it comes so fast, and it's over so fast, because you have... In the days before the pandemic, at least they could get a book tour, perhaps. They could arrange events. They could, if they were a major publisher, the major publisher would find them venues. But even if not, they could find their own venues. They could, you know, go to talk to clubs, talk to organizations, talk at conventions, and promote their books. Now, during this pandemic-y time, nobody's going anywhere, and they have this... If they had a publication date, a pub date in 2020 or 2021, even now, they're not going anywhere. They're sitting at home waiting, and they're looking at Amazon and Barnes and Noble to a lesser extent. But they're looking and saying, "Am I selling books? How am I going to reach people?" That's why I enjoy having authors on and giving them this chance to promote their books, but they are going to be forgotten. That's a fact of it, because they have no place to go to promote their books after like a week or so after their pub date. And that's why I want to have the top 10 books. I'm going to list the top 10 books that I think you should not miss, and go back and start reading. There's just... I wish I could just tell you how much fun I have reading all the books that I get, but also now listening to so many wonderful books that are on Audible. One of the books that I highly recommend, and perhaps it will put a lot of things in perspective. Okay, because now I can talk to John Hart. Hi, John.
Hi, I am sorry if I'm a few minutes late. There was some confusion on my end, I suspect.
Okay, well, and you're worth waiting for, John.
Well, thank you so much. I'm glad to be talking with you.
Oh, well. So the new book is called The Unwilling, and I've been talking about Civil War heroes, and now I'm talking about this book, which is... You've written it set in... Tell us about the character. Why did you select Vietnam as I've had so many books over the past year set either in, you know, in the Middle East during Desert Storm or during the Afghanistan, you know, years. But you've taken the Civil War. I'm sorry, not the Civil War. You've taken Vietnam, which I haven't had actually very many books set in Vietnam in the past few years.
Well, thanks for the question. So the book takes place in 1972. It's actually set in the city of Charlotte, North Carolina, and it's about the impact of the Vietnam War. It's not necessarily a war story.
Yeah, no, it's not.
You know, one of the main characters, and the main characters are two brothers. The older brother has served three tours over there and came home under some really questionable circumstances. And, you know, so the story really launches into high gear when he comes home under a cloud. He ends up in prison for, you know, various things. And the story begins when he gets out of a 3-year stint in prison. But in terms of why I wanted to write this particular story and this particular character, it ties back to something that happened in Vietnam, an historical event known now as the My Lai Massacre. A lot of people have heard of this. It was considered at the time to be, well, and still today, to be the worst atrocity of the Vietnam War. And so basically what happened is in 1968, a troop of poorly led, kind of war-crazed U.S. soldiers ended up slaughtering most of an entire village of innocent South Vietnamese civilians. And in the midst of this carnage comes a guy named Hugh Thompson Jr., who was a helicopter pilot, flying a small helicopter with a two-man crew, and he came to understand what was happening and literally put himself and his crew between these crazed soldiers and these innocent civilians, saved untold lives. But because the atrocity was so horrible, the military decided to cover it up. The story broke a year later by a guy named Seymour Hersh, who won the Pulitzer Prize for writing of the My Lai Massacre. But in spite of that, this guy, Hugh Thompson, and his crew were vilified, you know, for 30 years by the military and by the government, in spite of the fact that what they displayed was just unquestionable moral fiber and heroism and extreme courage. So I like this idea of courage regardless of cost, and this clear-eyed willingness to take those chances and to risk one's own life. And so I created the character Jason French, built around this very shady period of his time in Vietnam where he was involved in We Know Not What, as the book begins. But we come to learn that he was involved in something pretty horrible that shaped who he was and what he brings home with him when he reencounters his younger brother and his family. So that was sort of the genesis of the idea. But this may be too long an answer, and feel free to cut me off, but I was a child in 1972, and I remember the simplicity of a child's perspective. You know, we played in the creeks and did all these things, and it's not like things are today. But as an adult, I can look back and recognize the incredible complexity and tumultuous nature of that time. You know, there was racial strife then, there was war, Cold War, political corruption, inflation, all these things that were pulling the country apart in a lot of the same ways we're seeing now. So I wanted to write a story that addressed the simplicity of my memories of the early 70s, but also the complexities of what reality was. And this family was the vehicle by which I chose to do it.
Well, it is a complex story. And the interesting thing is, as you said, Vietnam, for most people today, young people today, actually don't know much about it. They've seen some movies, but they don't know much about it. They don't know the genesis of that war, how it started, why it started. There were so many lies told to the American public that they never really understood it. And then what happened to men when they came back and how they were treated, you know, although we've seen it in films, still the impact of it was incredible, and nobody understood in those days anything about PTSD.
No, they had no idea. You know, and even now, not everyone truly understands it. But you know, the stakes are high for these soldiers in so many ways, and you know, that's where the title "The Unwilling" comes from. It's a quote from an unknown soldier of that era. And I believe the quote goes like this: "We the unwilling, led by the unqualified, to kill the unfortunate, die for the ungrateful." And that was a pretty common sentiment, I think, for the ground troops that fought in Vietnam.
Well, and for the pilots too, because I have been working for years on a project to honor the forgotten F-105 pilots of that time, you know, Operation Rolling Stone at the time, and they have been forgotten, and the soldiers on the ground have been forgotten, and the trauma that they went through, and so this story, I think, is very intriguing for people who don't know anything about the war, and of course, as always with your Southern, there's always this Southern element, you know, that comes through your books. I remember when I read The Hush, and I thought, oh my goodness, this is so great, again, it's character driven, and you've developed these characters that are fascinating.
Well, thanks. I work hard to do that. I love compelling plots, but they mean little if the characters aren't the kind of people you can really understand. Good, bad, ugly, indifferent. All the nature of what makes people interesting. You got to put them in these characters so the reader really feels them. But the last thought on this idea of the Vietnam War, and as a reflection of what America was going through at the time, you know, we had such clarity in World War II. I mean, the stakes were crystal clear, and you know, the country was so habituated to this clarity and to being the good guy. In Vietnam was this poorly understood morass that the public never truly understood, because I suppose our leaders never truly understood. And it was a turning point for the country. And so, again, I didn't want to write a story about the war. I was too young to participate, and so I don't feel qualified. But I do understand, as a writer, so much about what impacts families. And so because this is a crime novel, I mean, it really is. It's a crime story layered on a foundation of family dysfunction and trauma from the war and all of the political confusion and corruption of that time is kind of what I describe as a textured foundation on which to build, a crime novel.
Well, and you've done it very well. Of course, you won the Edgar Award twice for best novel, and in a row too, I think. right, which I don't think anybody else has done.
Yeah. So. Well, it was kind of interesting. I apologize for that noise. So my first three books were both nominated for Edgar's, and my second and third won. So it was a good way to start the career.
It was, absolutely. Well, the name of the book is The Unwilling. Beautiful cover, really nice, nicely done. And of course, right there you have a blurb by CJ Box, who's been on the program many times. I love CJ. I love him.
He's a great guy.
And he says, raw, tender, brutal, and exquisite. And if CJ Box says that, then you know it's a great book. And John Hart, thank you so much for, you know, being on Joy on Paper today. I don't have much time because we got in a little late, but I want to tell you that it's always fun to talk to you. I love talking to you about The Hush, and of course, John is also the author of Redemption Road for all of you. I know many of my listeners have read that book. And The Unwilling is the latest book, and it's available wherever books are sold. And do you have a website you want people to go to?
Yes, I do. It's johnhartfiction.com. And if you're into social media, there are links there. You can find me. But no, please come along for the ride. I had a lot of fun writing this book, and the response to it has been lovely. And I hope that just continues to grow.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, John. It was great talking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Patsy. Have a great day.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, we got him eventually. Okay, I don't know. Maybe he's also in California. Sometimes people sleep late. I discovered that. I don't sleep late. I start at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I start reading at 5 o'clock in the morning, which, of course, luckily I didn't have a glass of red wine when I started reading Black Coral, because I think that's a little too early. But both of these books are exciting, and I'm sure that you will enjoy them, and it's always so much fun for me to talk to the authors, and particularly on Thursday, I'm going to be talking to Eugenia Lovett West, My goodness, she's going to be celebrating her 97th birthday. Her 97th birthday. And she's going to be back. You know, when she was 96, she wrote a thriller about cybercrime. So if Eugenia Lovett West could do it at 96, I don't know how old all of you people are out there, but you got time. You just have to start writing. And so I'm really excited that she's going to be on the program because she's an inspiration. You know, she remembers things that happened in World War II. Well, she got married during World War II. And it's so wonderful always to talk to her. So that's something to look forward to. But again, as I tell all of you, you know, what can I say? You've got to start writing. It's still, you know, it's February. It's the beginning of the year. And if you're not practicing your magic tricks, like I'm going to be, it looks like we're going to be pandemic-y for another few months. I'm going to be trying to, you know, really get this magic trick done, at least one magic trick for the year. That would be an accomplishment. 2021, I accomplish a magic trick. All right, I'm going to try. And then hopefully soon we'll be able to have book events again, and I will be able to come in around to book clubs and writers groups and talk to everybody in person because it is getting really boring. I really do not like Zoom. I'm telling you, it is driving me crazy. I don't enjoy it. I just don't enjoy it. It's just not the same thing. Anyway, people, remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in an audible book. And I'm rushing this, aren't I? And Ed's shaking his head. He said, why is she starting so fast? Poor Ed. I drive him crazy. I love Ed. He's so great. Anyway, remember, one of the things I always say is, I don't know what the heck I'm saying anymore. My goodness, I'm going to go crazy. I'm telling you, Zoom is going to do it to me. In the end, we're all going to go Zoomy crazy. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. And that would be just fantastic. I want that for Carol J. Perry. I want her Witch City Mysteries because I am getting so tired of the reruns and the horrible things that they keep playing over and over and over again. Anyway, we can hope. We live in hope. That's what we have to do. Everybody, take care. Do your vaccination thing, whatever. But meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. He keeps calm when I get nervous. It's wonderful. Anyway, we got in our second guest today. He, you know, eventually Ed got him on the line. Okay, bye-bye, everybody. Oh, and Ed saluted me. I think he saluted me. I don't know if he salutes me. I'm going to salute him because he's great. Everybody, have a great day. Bye-bye now.